When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Binchdown TV. And today, you're here to listen to me, Kathleen, and my guest host, Alex, friend of the pod, girlfriend of me, talk about The Traitors Season 2, Episode 4, titled The Funeral. Now, this was absolutely fucking electric. 10 out of 10 episode of not only reality TV, but all of television. I mean, the way my stomach hurt during this episode because I care so much, between the chalice, the funeral, the outfits, the infighting within the traitors, I was squealing. But again, as a Parvati stan, I was hurting. My soul was hurt, but hopeful. You know what I mean? I was hurting. So this week we have my honey, my girl, Alex. If you're a Bingetown fan, you might know her from our Succession podcast, or even further back, our Amazon Prime's The Wilds Gone Too Soon podcast. That's not the title of the podcast. It was just a Wilds coverage, but it was Gone Too Soon. So Alex, not only tell us your thoughts about the episode, but tell us, like, which of the reality stars did you know? I think me and you are pretty similar on this.
Episode end, who I knew. Let's start with who I knew. So I'm housewife, like, familiar. I mean, that's probably not even a good enough word, because everyone out there, there's Luis is a housewife historian. Our friend Kevin is pretty good on that as well. But I watched OC back in the day, so I knew Tamara and I knew she was crazy. Obviously, I know the Survivor folks, and I watched The Challenge growing up too. So I knew CT and Johnny Bananas, anyone kind of from that realm. I don't know Big Brother. That's a giant blind spot. And
me too.
I think it'll stay that way for my whole life. That and Amazing Race. I'm getting in on Survivor. I can't be doing another one that's 50 seasons long.
Don't forget, your true heart and soul is Love Island, Ekin Sue.
Right. I mean, that's the most important to me. She's a star. Get her an Emmy this episode. Gone Too Soon. Gone Too Soon, just like The Wilds, might I say.
Everyone's saying that.
Everyone's saying Ekin Sue, Gone Too Soon, just like The Wilds on Amazon Prime.
Seven tweets just like that today.
In our specific corner of gay internet. Yeah.
Exactly.
Maybe.
But okay. So we're going to break this episode down in three parts. We're going to do pre-funeral, funeral, and post-funeral. And every single chunk of this episode, it is fucking exciting. There's not a single second that's not worth talking about, but we're going to try and keep this like a tight 50 or 45. Who's to say?
We'll do our best.
Okay. So let's jump in pre-funeral. So we open at the close. We leave off not knowing who Ekin Sue. Sorry. I jumped the gun.
Spoiler.
Who Parvati is going to poison. And I'll let you give a little sayonara to Ekin Sue while we're here, just because I only watched Love Island one season, and it was because of you, and it was her season. And man, was she just an icon and a legend.
She will forever be. I mean, Phaedra said it best, you know, not Ekin Sue.
Lord, sweet baby Jesus, not Ekin Sue.
I don't think she meant it like I did, but, you know, all the same, she has the best line reads of anyone on that show. So, yeah, I will pour one out for her into my mouth. That's my queen. She is a reality TV queen, and I think we'll be seeing more of her. I don't know where, maybe The Challenge. People are doing crossovers in the US with a lot of Love Island UK folks. And
she
needs to be televised. That's all I can say.
She does. And I feel like she just didn't get enough. This episode shows that she is worthy of being there and can like go toe to toe with some of these just like obvious stars. I feel Ekin Sue was one of the ones that people didn't know going in. And like Matt said on our previous episode, like the barrier of entry into Love Island is high because one, it drops every day. It's so easy to get behind when there's 50 episodes dropping and they're not short episodes. So you really
have commitment.
It is. So watching my girl, my heart, my soul, Parvati, go up to my sweet, sweet Ekin Sue, and Ekin Sue not only like taking that cup, but saying, I love you. I would never think you were a traitor. we both were like squealing. And I think the internet was kind of saying it's Ek and Sue. So I think my heart was a little padded, but it still hurt.
And even clearly Parvati didn't want to do that. You know, she seemed to think that was one of her allies, which, you know, we'll get to this later. Feels like she doesn't have many, or at least that's the narrative they're spinning. And I think it wasn't intentional. That was a really hard challenge. It's very interesting how they've gone from like 0 to 100 from season 1 to 2 on like protection of the traitors and hosting to like, that's an insane chat. That cup is musty, dusty. There's not like college kids there. I mean, maybe Bergy is in a frat or something for nerds. Yeah. Love you, Bergy. But you know what I mean? It's like getting someone to drink out of that, those bougie fucks, so many of them, that's a challenge. And you kept saying, oh, it was so obvious she did that. Like, yes, to us, the viewer, but like totally. Not as much in person, but it still was more like conspicuous than not, I would say, because if you're running back over your day or night, I'm shocked Ek and Sue didn't be like, wait, I drank out of a really weird cup, you know?
Her brain's on vibrate, as Phaedra said. She can't remember, but I think they're also a little tuned up. Like, I really truly think they were a little fucking tipsy. I think those round tables are stressful and everyone just wants a drink after. Two things to what you said. One, completely agree. I think that we think Parvati looks sketchy as fuck, because we know she's being sketchy as fuck, but you have to see it through other people's eyes. And the editing, I mean, they're working miracles over there. They're cutting, splicing in moments that are not at the right time chronologically to make it look like someone's making a face. Now, I agree again with you that the faithfuls are reading way too much into this kill, because this was a murder of opportunity. She didn't want to kill Ek and Sue. This was an impossible challenge to give, and that Phaedra bowed out of, and then Dan was pussyfooting around the book. Just grab Othello and run, bitch. Like, what are you doing? Grab the cup. You, like, lurking around the books isn't helping anyone. And Parvati just, like, beelines it, grabs it, and is like, okay, let's go. At the end of the funeral, they're like, why would they kill Ek and Sue? That's so stupid. These traitors are so dumb. And it's like, when you rewatch the show, you'll realize it was like, who the fuck is going to drink this dirty, rusty chalice? Like, who?
Right. But it could be the catalyst. I mean, it seems like things are maybe unraveling for Parvati a bit, but it seems like all three of them, not so much Phaedra, but after the gamers versus housewives of it all, it seems like they're kind of on the radar. You know what I mean? More so than anyone in season 1 was for a long time. But that's because Dan's a goddamn flop. I wanted to shout it the second he said his name. Like,
yeah.
Oh my God. I like, you know, drop your buffs. Shout out that podcast has starless. Like, he's flop. Yeah. If we have something, it's full flop, and that's him. And for them to like pin it on Parvati, it was not an easy task. And so to kind of let her sort of stumble through what happens after is also shitty if you're all on the same team. But, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. And we'll dive more into that because I do want to deep dive the traitors in fighting in general. But now that Ek and Sue took the chalice, let's just move into the morning breakfast. Couple things happening here. The first three people at breakfast are Dan, Phaedra, and Parvati. So they get to have their meeting because they didn't get to have their meeting at the night before. We get the iconic, like, Lord, not Ek and Sue. Like, so funny. She voted for Ek and Sue the night before, but Phaedra. And I get it. Like, the housewives are dramatic. They're here to make TV and be exactly like this. But like, you got to do something. And it's like everyone Phaedra has talked to, she's like, you better not talk to them. You better not touch them. It's like, we got to do something. I love Phaedra. I think she's great TV. And especially the last minute of this episode is just like queens going up against queens. And then a lowly jester next to them. Dan's fine. I think he's finally showing up in this episode a little bit. Doesn't mean he's not flop, but yeah. And then so next, CT is the one who first calls out Bravo people in this episode, basically being like, they're working together. I'm seeing a pattern, etc. You were a real world person, right? So you know CT, Trishel, Johnny Bananas.
Yeah.
Right. And just to quickly touch on their conversation they have later on the episode where Trishel has a talking head and she's like, you know, I really do think CT has changed. And it's true. Like, I've been calling him like a little bit of a dorkus this entire season because they keep showing him like making like faces like, oh, but not actually like playing the game. I think this episode he's finally starting to play the game, but it's cracking me up. But I do think he's just grown out of being just a mega dick, you know?
Yeah, well, his stylist needs to be fired too, because it's just ill-fitting clothing from the leather jacket in the first episode. Like, he looks uncomfortable. So it's like that and the like, what's going on? Like, all of that has been, I think, the opposite of what people think of him if you know him even remotely from the challenge. He's like alpha as fuck and is just like a nut job back in the day, like just hulking out all the time. So it is like quite a departure. But you were saying this, or we were talking about this with our friend Kevin over text. It's like, these people have grown up. This is like the grown up version of them on reality TV, like in a real way, where they used to just be like 20 something and drunk on TV all the time.
Exactly.
They're now like a little more mature. Their parents are settled in and they've gone through different phases of life. So it's interesting to see. But yeah, I think that's where we start to see the infighting start to go. And like Janelle clearly in her talking head starts to feel it too, even around the breakfast. She's like, fuck Ekansu, like fuck this bitch. She's like, she's so annoying. But I always think this is funny. And it happened on the last season. Caitlyn hated Rachel so bad.
Oh, big time.
I just feel like people find someone, mostly women, find another woman to hate. And usually it's like a younger one who's maybe like a rising star in reality TV. And they're like, fuck this person. But it's like, you are probably the same exact way when you got your start on reality TV. Be for real.
Let me ask you a question. When you watch The Traitors, and you had recently watched Traitors season one, maybe a month ago. So she's fresh to The Traitors game. And so when you're watching it, are you rooting for the traitors or the faithfuls? Or does it matter who is on what side?
I think I've just been rooting for the traitors both times because we're also deep in our Survivor era. And so the bias is strong. And so like Suri, I was cheering for. But there are people I liked on the faithful side. Just you see the cards stacked against them. So it's like, why would I root for that? However, yeah, I think it's just like they're stacking the traitors with people I like personally. And then the underdog's a little too, the odds are not in their favor. This season's a bit different. I really hope Parvati's not in his jeopardy as much as it keeps feeling like, but I'd like to see them get Dan. I don't want Phaedra to go anytime soon. She's perfection on television, but like, I guess I don't truly have like which one I prefer. It's more about like singular contestants, I suppose.
Yeah, we can't lose Phaedra soon. We just lost Larsa. And without Larsa, I feel hurt. Yeah. So, I mean, next episode, we're going to have our friend Kevin on, who is a Real Housewives stan over everything. So we're going to even out the biases a little bit. And even in this episode, I'm trying to not be so biased. I'm trying to be
he's a
more even keeled
challenge head, too. So that'll be good, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. So in this, Janelle is grouping people, right? And this is like the first time I've heard someone group it this way, because even though they're gamers, quote unquote, so that's Dan, Parvati, Trishel, CT, Sandra, and herself, because Janelle's from Big Brother, it's like they're all different shows, but I feel like this was the first time it was spelled out to me. Like, this is a clique. They all think the same way, so they're going to gravitate towards each other. And I'm like, oh, I needed that spelled out for me, because to me, it's like Survivor's different than Big Brother. That's different than the challenge and they're all separate, but it's really not, which wasn't apparent to me until this episode.
I don't think it was apparent to me either, but I guess it makes sense, right? Especially in the world of Survivor, you want numbers, right? So I think even like Trishel and CT don't have good history. They didn't have some like open heart to heart. It's what Peppermint said in the first episode. It's the devil you know, right? Like even Sandra and Parvati are sort of working together and Sandra's taking information back to the gamers. It does seem, whether it was on the cutting room floor or not, these people made a decision that like, this is our gang of numbers for now.
Totally.
At least, you know, and I think that's very interesting. Housewives, I mean, we saw the Bravo people last season, I think, kind of cluster. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of similar this time. There's just like way more Housewives than any other show. There's Shaws of Sunset with MJ, but some of those are more natural. Because those worlds are smaller. They're all in the Andy. Oh my God. Is it
Andy Cohenverse?
I was like, Andy Cohen Cinematic Universe. Yeah. They're all in that.
Yeah. ACCU.
Yeah. You know.
Okay. I got it. Yeah. So this really teased it off, this episode, into gamers versus Bravo. And then as Janelle so eloquently put, there's the faithfuls, who is Bergie, Peter, and John, and then dumb faithfuls like Kevin. So there are people that people are just like, okay, writing you off completely. I feel like they should put completely non-suspecting people next season, like a Bergie and a Peter. Right.
You have to, because it's like, I think at some point that card's about to be played out, right? It's like, they'd obviously be a traitor, so they would never make them one. Like, now we've seen two seasons of that. So I think that's going to go by the wayside. I agree. If Janelle's already privy to the fact that, like, she's right, all those people are faithfuls, dummies or not, and everyone else is pretty much up in the air based on those groups. Yeah, that's not really good casting in that way of the traitors. I agree.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just kick it into gear. Alan comes in after, you know, Ekin comes in and Parvati and Dan and Phaedra are absolutely shook to their core. And there's these really funny talking heads, you know, which are shot afterwards. It always cracks me up in these types of show when they're like explaining it as if it's like in the moment, but like they already know how the whole day plays out before they're doing these talking heads. But either way, they're like, what is Ekin doing here? Did Parvati do it wrong? Whatever. And then Alan just comes in and shines in this episode in his way. Always love him. But the dramatics and his like savageness was made for this funeral live, quote unquote, death we're seeing here. But while this is like almost a perfect episode of television, I do have some issues with this setup because, one, let me just say, I'm thrilled to have the traitors do more dangerous things and put their necks on the line because, honestly, in season one, it was a cakewalk compared to this. But Parvati could have had her entire game blown up because of this. It wasn't explicitly said that everyone was going to have time to talk about what was the poison, what happened, etc. So, like, Parvati was kind of stumbling around with that chalice. Like, someone could have clocked her easily. Thank God she gave it to Ekin Sue, who's just, like, a little obtuse and didn't clock it because all it would have taken was Ekin to say, well, Parvati handed me a chalice. Ekin Sue dies, and then Parvati is next to be banished. Like, easy as that. It didn't work out that way by some work of the gods or by the traitors' producers. So what did you think of this in general?
I want to go back to what you said about the talking heads and stuff, because even in the room, the reaction of Phaedra, Dan, and Parvati that they filmed in Innersplice, if you made that fucking face in the room, you're the traitor. What exactly the fuck are you talking about? Like that, again, this was an incredible episode of reality TV, but like, that to me, you're suspending my sense of belief.
Yeah.
And like, I need you to like make it feel like it's actually authentic a little more for me. Agreed. And a little less produced. But because I get it, they're shook, right? But leave it for the talking head, not when they're in the room. And of course, I think they filmed scenes later, to your point. They could not have reacted that way and everything been fine. Unless everyone's just part of an entire extended play with Alan coming. And then, you know what? Maybe we'll all have fun with that. But yeah, like that's not the point of this show. So that alone, I do love that they're putting the traitors in a little bit of danger, giving them some hoops, sometimes some hoops set on fire. I do think that that's important, or else it was a bit of a snooze in season one, the way everything just kind of coasted. And it makes, I think you said this too, the challenge is more interesting to watch because I don't really give a fuck about them doing Fear Factor shit or the challenge light shit for money because they're going to get the money in the end, period. It racks up to 250. Anyways, like, so I think you made this point. I think you had said it before the season started, just like, instead of doing a challenge or picking win the money, you win a clue about a traitor. Like, I love that idea too. And again, I think this is along those lines where we're making the game more complex and I'm enjoying that.
I think the traitors has a long way to go in perfecting the game, but this feels like beta testing grounds.
Well, this is like, did you say that it was based, there's like 10 seasons in the UK, right?
I don't know how many seasons there are each, but so the chalice has never happened before. So it's not like they could have watched. It's happening at the same time right now in UK season two or Canada season two or something.
But not the same twists.
Not the same twists. And I think I think there's been other like twists, but not anything like a chalice and poison or anything.
Okay, because I thought at one point someone said like mirroring what happened in the UK, but I was like, anyone could fucking watch that and then know what's coming. So they can't quite do it to that
degree. Yeah. So I had said that to you, and it was that if you watch season one of the US and UK season one, I think it's the same exact challenges, but I think they aired around the same time.
Got it.
Like, okay. I don't know.
Oh, I thought this had been on a while. I don't know why. I don't know.
I don't know that UK season one was out yet before US season one. Whatever. Whatever. Okay. But anyway, as we move into Alan's speech, it's so funny that Ekin is the one who is reacting. She's like, she's giving Goof Town eating things, reacting to things that Alan says. It's just so happened that she's giving and she's the one who was killed, which is so funny. But quickly before we get to the actual funeral is really just saying Dan is playing the game because he's teaming up with Parv and wants to like eventually get out Phaedra, which is interesting. But I hated that before Parv came in the room, he was like, did anyone give anybody like chocolate or anything last night? And it's like, Dan, shut the fuck up. Like, you are bad. You are bad at acting.
At least say this morning. You know what I mean? Like, don't make people think it was last night. You know what I mean? Jesus Christ.
Exactly. So, Dan, you win one with trying to, like, be Parv's guy, and you lose one with that.
One other thing I wanted to say, again, related to sort of, like, the talking headshots and stuff and a difference from season one. They talked to each other in broad daylight more. Like, season one traitors never acknowledged each other one-on-one or in side never. Rooms ever, which every time it happens, you're like freaking
get out.
You're like,
there.
Yeah. You're like, please, Parvati. But like, that's a huge, like not note, but something I absolutely clocked of like being different. And again, is it producers working their magic? I don't know, but like, it's definitely something they either never put in the editing last year or just never happened. And maybe they were smarter, more careful. Maybe these people are more brazen. It's hard to say. Other thing I wrote, which I just want to talk about, like, what the fuck do you think they told them to pack for this entire trip? Like, they had funeral outfits to the gods and it was just so great. And I'm like, is the itinerary like a funeral outfit? And you're left to wonder, what will that be for? I'm so curious.
Yeah, either that or like, I don't know if there's a stylist on this show, but like, if someone says you're wearing all black, like there's going to be a few. I don't know if that's that big of a spoiler to
say. Not all black. They were wearing like the housewives had like the, I don't know what you call those things that are part veils. Like, it was iconic. I just wanted to call out that like they were clearly given a to-do list or a to-pack list and an assignment and everyone
they aced
up.
It.
They showed up because I think Alan made them want to show up to play the part. And I think that that's beautiful. And everyone deserves an Emmy.
Exactly. So I usually hate the challenges. Like in Survivor, I love watching the challenges. I think they're interesting. But for this, like to me, it just doesn't matter. There's no stakes. Even the shields, like I get it, but I also don't really care. Like there's no one I'm rooting against so much in the Faithfuls. And I'm like, oh, I hope they don't get a shield or... I guess there could be some that I'm like, oh, I hope they get a shield so they don't get killed, but not really. So this was the best challenge I've ever seen. The visuals, the outfits, the paid actors, the funeral choir singing one of the clues, and the throwing of the roses in the coffins. Just fucking iconic. Head to toe. Kiss. Chef's goddamn kiss.
Camp. Peak camp, frankly.
It is.
I mean, let's get into other a favorite moments from throughout that challenge. Sandra saying Larsa looks 10 years older than her. Full gag.
Also, who stabbed Sandra in the forehead? Tell me.
Girl.
Who took a knife and shoved it in her brain?
What happened in the Mission Impossible graveyard, girl? What happened?
I don't know.
That was incredible. Phaedra saying she is a funeral directress. I need to ask my Bravo heads what the fuck that means, because that cannot be a gig that she has. I have questions.
I don't know what that means either. We need intel. People, if you're on our Discord, ping us on if Phaedra... I could easily Google it, but I would rather it be in your words. Come hang and talk on Discord. But just the being born in the same year thing that Sandra said, like that being the first question, they knew what they were doing. Like you knew all those housewives were like, fuck no, I'll rather die than get...
Quite literally put me in the coffin first.
Yeah. But I honestly was shocked that like Kevin and Dan, 83. Yeah, I guess they're a full decade older than me. That makes sense for me. I guess they're like perpetually 25 from when I was a kid watching them.
I was shocked that CT is older than like them. They look older than him to me, but I don't know.
CT's older
CT
than
CT was
who?
Like 1980 and they were like 83, Dan and Kevin. And I was like, Dan is an old man to me.
Yeah. Okay. Did I say CT was 83?
No, you said Dan and Kevin, and it okay. is. But I think you were referring to CT.
Yeah. What the hell? Okay, that makes sense that he's 13 years older than me. Yeah, okay. Me and Alex, we live in the same house. We just got into Survivor together, along with Julia from the Survivor pod, and we just watched Sandra's first season. So again, it's season 7, which was in like 2004. So again, she's our age in my eyes. Like literally, if that's in 2004 and Sandra was born in 74, she's 30, I'm 30. Me and Sandra are the same age. That's girl math.
It does cause some cognitive dissonance to watch someone and you know that it is old because it's a square on your rectangular TV and low sure. quality. But then you see even Parvati, right? Like we watched her seasons recently too. And now she's like, you know, of her current age, has a little work done. Let's be honest, but we still love you. And you're always hot forever.
So
but,
hot. You know, love you, queer icon.
It is kind of jarring. You like see Sandra like in her 20s. And then it's like, here we are. But no, I wasn't really shocked by her age. I was cracking up at her Larsa comment. I'll never be over that in my life.
Fucking hilarious. But okay, quick, just like going over some things. So Tamara, Peter, and Janelle, we don't really know how these shields work, especially in like a twist like the chalice. So they got to just sit right in the carriage. So then the people born in the same year was Sandra, Larsa, Kevin, and Dan. They got to scoop. Next is who's still in the funeral march that's still in the game. And then that's Trishelle and CT.
I was screaming at that point. Like they hired these people to come out and sing about Johnny Bananas. These Scottish people are like, what in good God is going on with this crazy man? You know,
I will say that CT saying that's the first time Bananas ever done anything for me was hilarious. Like the little kid in me that used to watch Real World, Road Rules, Inferno, Challenge, bullshit. I loved that. I loved that. Trishelle and CT just kind of staring at me and CT's being like, if it's not us, he deserved to die. Fuck that guy, basically. And then he's like, all right, he's cool. He's safe.
Yes.
And then the last one was easy. Like who ran through the scarecrows dressed in red? That was like easy, whatever. That's Phaedra, John, Bergie, and Cherie. So Parvati, MJ, and Ekin are at the end. And do we feel that Parvati is getting protected?
Well, one, you were like, she looks so like guilty the whole walk. And I'm like, no, she looks like pissed or like pensive. Like her whole, like, I don't know if you're putting video up of this, but her whole demeanor is like Zoolander. I got the best.
It is giving Zoolander.
She's like always kind of like pensive and quizzical, but like the lips are like, ooh, like Zoolander. And it's cracking me up, but she looked pissed on the walk, which I think is the best card to play, right? Like, fuck, if I'm killed, this is fucking bullshit. Like that's a valid emotion versus like, Ekin and Sue's like pure panic. Cause if you can't channel panic, cause you know, you're not dying. Cause you know, you're a traitor. I think anger is a good, easy thing for people to access. I don't know. They're all actors at the end of the day. I wanted to say this earlier again about talking heads. If you think about it, these people, like you said, sit down after a whole day of existing or as housewives think, just living their lives. But like, then you have to recount everything and react and have the same emotion as if it's in the moment. They are all actors to a degree, whether it's like D-list, C, B, maybe sometimes an A-list performance. Yeah. They're all actors to be on like professional reality TV. Let's be for real. You know what?
I would say 90% of this cast, that's the great equalizer, is talking heads. And on every respective show, they're giving talking heads. Love Island, Big Brother, Survivor, Bravo, Shaw's of Sunset, Married to Medicine. Challenge. They're all the challenge. So Deontay and maybe like even Maxim, I think, has talking heads on Dancing with the Stars. So like it is the great equalizer. It really is. That's a great point, Al. I love that. So they get their skills up.
I mean, and yeah. Otherwise, I don't want to jump around, but like the only quote I wrote was Phaedra saying, "Don't come for the housewives, honey. We are not a game." And I'm like, but like you are performers, please. But they're performing. So of course they have to say that, but
yeah,
my whole thought process after this episode was, yeah, everyone is acting to a degree and you have to, and you're playing a role on this particular show and this particular season. And that's what you're there to do.
Yeah. Anyway, we're moving forward. It's unanimous on MJ. The visual of MJ rising from the dead and all those flowers falling off of her made me actually laugh out loud. I mean, perfect. And, at this point, everyone's still trashing at Kinsu, being like, I don't know why they kill her. She's fucking useless. I'm like, go to jail. She's not useless. She's a sweet angel. And I love her. She didn't even get to crawl on her hands and knees in this series. Like, I needed her kissing other boys and crawling. And
she probably crawled out of the coffin we didn't see so they could put dirt on it. It'll be in like the behind the scenes.
And you're in the camp of Ekin was not in that coffin while they were putting on it.
I think if she was, they would have put a camera in it, like the season one challenge to have a reaction. Yeah. Otherwise, no, they got her ass out and everyone just still frowned at the coffin like she was in it. But I was hoping it was going to be like season one, like the burial challenge, because she would have gave good TV and that would have been a great send off, you know?
Exactly. I still think she did. RIP to the girl. We'll miss you. But you looked beautiful as per usual. And I loved it. And I stuck up for her. Anytime we were watching with someone, I was like, I'm obsessed with Ekin Su. When I was texting about the traitors, I'm like, don't sleep on Ekin Su. She's a fucking slay. So RIP. But now everyone thinks it's MJ because somehow Parvati is not getting any heat. Like, how is it not like, oh, well, it's either Parvati or MJ, right? Like, why is it? It's got to be MJ. I get it because MJ, quote unquote, should have been killed. But why is Parvati getting no heat? Parvati is the Black Widow. She's the queen. She's known for, I mean, every talking head, she's like, I'm a fucking spider and I'll crawl and I'll kill you at the last second and you'll never see it coming. And it's like, where is Sandra warning people about Parvati? And like, I don't know.
Well, I guess if you want to squash your beef, you can't go running around like bad mouthing her. And if you're on an alliance, that's not really overtly said until everyone is pointing at each other and then not refuting it. You know, it's clear the alliances are real because no one's refuting it. They're like, well, what about yours? Like, that's the whole kind of theme of free round table and also within the round table, I would say it's also interesting how Tamara and people latched onto Kevin. Like, Tamara's like, this fucker can't chew with his mouth closed and he's disgusting and he's a traitor. Like,
actually, yeah. Is disgusting though. Who chews like that as an adult? That's fucking insane.
Nuts. They're giving him kind of like a bozo edit too. Like, he's like, I ate too many shrimp, like skewers. Like, we're like,
I'm definitely poisoned. I ate everything yesterday.
That's kind of like the edit they're giving these men, which I don't hate. Like, kind of love that this season is
exactly
men getting steamrolled to shit.
Tamara just being like, do your kids eat like that? I'll smack them over the head. Like, fucking iconic. The housewives give good TV, and our friend Kevin, again, he'll come here and he'll fight to the death. We're his housewives next week. But he sent us this like tweet today of like four instances of the housewives just reading people for filth. And it is fucking iconic. And the tweet was basically like, here, I'll shout them out. The tweet was from David M. DMED 48. And DMEDD 48, and it says, some of these people really acting like they can talk to the housewives any type of way without repercussions. And it's four separate videos. I can maybe put it in the comments of this video on Spotify, Apple, whatever you're listening on, just to reference it. If you're not a housewives person, I feel like that really put me in check, and I would be scared of Phaedra if I was Barbie. Yes,
it's a good primer. It's a good primer. Also scared. I mean, Tamara's clearly calmed it a little bit, but yeah, she got a little physical in the past, I would say. And what Phaedra said was so crazy out of line. It was unreal. So these women answer to no one, frankly, and they cannot be stopped. And I think that's the beauty of the housewives. And that's why people still watch like 20 something seasons in, and they rotate in and out of seasons. Like, it is a cinematic universe. Andy Cohen, thank you.
Thanks, Andy. So let's smoothly ride into the post-funeral. We are working really in Gamers versus Bravo at this point. Don't know that really much. Many other people were shown in this, but one, Parvati throws out Larsa to the Gamers. Her reason being, the only reason for the traitors not to kill MJ is because you're either working with her or you think she's got your back, like you're in an alliance. So she also is the one who cited the cheers from the morning, which was great because that was all the way in the morning of the previous day versus the night of.
Parvati said that? Parvati was the one to call that out?
You know, maybe it was Janelle. Was it Janelle? or Trishelle?
I think Janelle. No, it was Janelle, because then Larsa was like, well, I think you're weird because you're selfish and you're fucking weird.
I'm not talking about the round table. I'm talking about when Parvati brings this up pre-round table. And
without them there. Okay. Yeah.
Someone brings up the cheers, either Janelle or Parvati. I think I have it down as Parvati, but maybe it's Janelle. Then Janelle's the one who brings it up later. But and then originally Sandra, our girl, was sticking with the housewives to keep her enemies close, quote unquote, because she was like, Larsa runs the show.
She did a good job.
My skin. And I like this. I need Sandra to be a little more savage. I need Sandra from Pearl Island screaming it at fucking Johnny Fairplay.
Eavesdropping in the bushes. That's her number one MO. She's going to pick up on the information.
You know, she's 2 million B, born in 74. She's getting up there. Like, I love you, girl. I'm not saying you're old or anything. I'm just saying, like, these people have evolved. Like, someone had, who was it, you that saying in text today that Parvati's not like her normal flirtatious self? You said that. And I'm like, that was like 14 years ago that she was on.
Yeah, but she's still like, I'm a black widow. I don't know. It's interesting what people choose to keep from these like original personas and what they don't, I guess, is like what, you know, we're saying.
I think when you're 20 something, like, there's that scene in Micronesia where her, Ozzy, and Yul are naked in a hot tub. Like, I really don't see Parvati doing that these days, because when you're
there's late 30s. I'm not saying that, but even just like her, like, schoolgirl giggle at people. I haven't seen a giggle from her. Like, she's got to turn up. I mean, again, we'll get to this. She's got to turn the charm up, because
the personality,
clearly, no one fucking likes her, according to somebody.
We'll get there. I'm pissed. Yeah,
I know.
Since I have never covered one of Parvati's seasons on the podcast, I just would like to shout out her auction scene in Survivor, where she's in the tub with the chocolate cake and she looks at the idol and says, looks authentic. It's just
iconic.
It's fucking iconic. She is the GOAT. So anyway, Sandra's turning on the girls that she was keeping close to vote for Larsa. On the flip side, Larsa wants a man. She thinks it's an alpha male, which to me, I'm like, sure. Okay. I mean, odds are there's going to be a single dude in the traders and it's probably not fucking Burgalicious. So yeah, maybe it's an alpha male. If you think Dan's an alpha male, to me, that kind of is like, no, but maybe they consider that. So they're between CT and Dan. They're leaning more towards CT, but in the end, they all mostly end up voting for Kevin. So if there's one thing that separates the gamers from the housewives, is that the housewives do not understand how crucial it is to vote as a block with your alliance. You cannot Cherie throwing a vote away.
John.
Larsa getting voted out when she threw a vote away is devastating, because I wanted Larsa to stay. I wouldn't mind if Kevin just got voted out. I don't need to see him chewing anymore. Thoughts.
No, I agree. It was very clear. Gamers developed their whole thing from playing games. Cherie's whole strategy to win last year was to go with the vote. That is how you win in Survivor. If you're playing like a more less dominant game and like a more strategic game, you go with the vote. You don't force the hand. You don't push people in a direction, because then you look in this game like a traitor, right? Or like you have an agenda, which thus means you're a traitor. But housewives, I mean, it's just written on the wall for me. It's the ego, honey. It's gonna get you every time. Like, the only thing I can think is ego of like, I'm right and this is who I want to vote for, or just like, I don't want to go with the group because I don't want to like do the wrong thing. I don't know. It shocked me that Larsa made such a shitty decision, because she has been quote unquote very smart in this game, when people say she's normally like an absolute ding dong. Cherie, I'm not like super shocked she did that, but again, I can see why it's easier for gamers to just go with what they're hearing and with each other and the sort of safe vote. They know how to read these situations. Whereas I don't know that housewives know how to read a vote. They know how to read a person to filth and make them cry, but I don't know that they know how to read a vote.
Yeah. So I'm going to read through the votes, and then we can talk about the turret and include kind of Parvati coming for the housewives, Phaedra coming for Parvati, et cetera. So the votes go like this. Dan voted Larsa. Tamara voted Kevin. CT voted Larsa. Cherie voted John. Fucking crazy. So stupid. Bergie voted Larsa. MJ voted Kevin. Phaedra, Kevin. Sandra, Larsa. Peter, MJ. So random. Like, get it together. You're obviously not an alliance. What the fuck?
He'd be on my radar for doing kooky shit. He voted Kevin that first time and he tried to spark that fake drama with him. And then now he's doing this. He's kind of like that normie from season one, Quentin, who was never on the correct side of the vote.
Yeah.
But here it's a little more sus with all these people.
Wait, you want to hear something kind of fucking funny? Sandra today on Instagram posted just the video of Peter and Kevin having that conversation. Sandra's nowhere to be found. I feel like, and no caption. She just put on Instagram on her grid the video of Peter and Kevin being like, "You vote me, I vote you. Let's act tense together." Obviously, she's throwing shade, being like, "What the fuck?"
She said, "Here, honk honk. Here's your nose."
She said, "Okay, Bling Empire, fucking Bachelor."
Sandra has jokes. I'm enjoying it.
She does. So Alex and I Benjamin buttoned Survivor, and we watched Heroes Villains first. So we watched Sandra and Parvati and Heroes Villains first, and then we watched Micronesia. And then we watched Pearl Island. So we saw, and then we watched Cook Island. So we were bouncing, but we saw the like evolution backwards of them.
Yeah, like the peak of them, the all stars of it all type theme for people exactly. Who aren't Survivor people, and then went back to their more like either first season or earlier season. And yeah, it was silly to do it that way, but yeah, you know, I enjoyed the ride.
And we knew from, you know, Sandra burning Russell's hat, like all this stuff. If I had seen Pearl Islands first, I would have understood that this was on par for her. But I feel like watching Heroes Villains, and she flew under the radar for the most part because she wasn't part of like the majority alliance. And now I just realized that she's fucking hilarious and she's just a savage. So anyway, so yeah, Peter voted MJ. John voted Kevin. Janelle voted Larsa. Larsa voted CT. Again, waste of a vote. Parvati, Larsa, Kevin, Larsa, Trishelle, Larsa. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 on Larsa. Kevin had 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, so they couldn't have
saved
themselves.
I wrote down the totals. It was 4 Kevin, 8 Larsa, 1 John, 1 MJ, 1 CT. So again, a mess. I feel like, again, in season one, people were voting pretty clear down.
100%
down the middle. So this is like very interesting to see. I think it makes for a more interesting game. But then people make these huge mistakes, like Larsa. Like I can't get over her doing that, especially as someone who has clearly an amazing read on one of the traders, Dan.
Yeah,
you hate to see the people who have it right like shoot themselves in the foot, not get like plucked off by the traders or flying too close to the sun. She just absolutely played herself.
Yeah, it's almost like they're waiting too long to put a target on someone's back. So then it's hard for everyone to jump on it. Like even, I don't know the logistics of how this show is shot, but even them deciding at the last second it's Larsa felt like, okay, can we get the numbers? Like, what's going on? Like, so who's to say? They need to get their shit together. And Larsa, RIP the girl, such fun TV. I cannot wait for her at the reunion. Like immediately she's going to be so fire. I just know. And we'll see you at the reunion, girl.
One other great... Sandra was shading the shit out of Larsa this whole time. But this was at the round table and she said, "You displayed traitorous behavior." And I thought that was iconic as well. And yeah. I remember that from the trailer and being worried it was directed at Parvati. So that was a bullet dodged for now. But yeah.
But you know what wasn't a bullet dodge? Fucking Parvati coming for Phaedra. I mean...
She stood in front of a train on that one.
So my best friend, Stephanie... is a Housewives girly. She's a Bravo stan. And she was live texting me today watching the traders. And she's like, "Oh my God, I really hope Phaedra's not actually mad at Parvati. That's so scary." And then 5 minutes later was like, "Oh my God, that's so scary." Like, because people just don't understand these women are not to be trifled with. And, you know, I knew from the start at the round table that Phaedra was mad. Like, that was not acting. That was mad. You know, the way they cut this episode is that Parvati and Dan didn't really even say anything. Like Dan was like, "Wait, what happened? What? And then Parvati just kind of, even when Phaedra's like, "Nobody likes you, Parvati." That is such a Bravo thing to say. Like, that's not even true. Like,
I guess my question is, are we not getting the edit that she is? Like, again, are the producers just like giving this like this winner edit to Parvati, but probably not for her to win. But like, I don't see people overtly like saying her name or bitching about her in the way that they were like complaining about Ekansu or Janelle or Larsa or whatever, or Kevin. But Phaedra has to be speaking that from somewhere. I don't think she just plucked like a schoolyard insult. Like, I feel like I don't know. It could go either way. It could go, that's just something that could hurt anyone and take them down a peg, or it's just the edit we're not seeing. It's on the cutting room floor, as Ari likes to say about some certain things on the trainers.
Wuss. Speaking of Ari and Quentin, go check out Ari's story tonight or last night. Hurry up. Hopefully I get this out in 24 hours so you can see it.
Tomato, tomato.
But yeah, so, I mean, the heat's coming. Phaedra did kind of seem like she's willing to work with Parvati and Dan still, but like they better get their act together. I agree that Parvati, that was shots fired. You can't just say it's one of the Bravo girls, vote out a Bravo girl, and then not expect it to be like, okay, then it's one of the other Bravo girls. Like it really was. That's like someone being like, it's got to be one of the two Survivor girls, even though.
Right. It's a little too pointed, but like I see her point, but also you can't do that to your teammate. However, Phaedra also needs to buck up and realize that you can't carry every Bravo girly to the finish line.
Yes.
At some point they have to go. And the longer you keep them around, the more sus it looks and the more like you have a target on your back. Cause what if they think it's you? Cause you're so unsuspected. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think Parvati made the wrong move on the wrong one, but like Phaedra also needs to get her head in the game a little. Cause she sort of shows up in the tower and just has fun lines, but she hasn't been calling any shots.
I'm on the fence. I'm thinking this was a big move by Parvati. I think Parvati knows she has Dan on her side, but I'm a little unclear on the rules of, you know, can Phaedra, I think Phaedra can just go up to someone and be like, I think it's Parvati. And could she like lie and be like, I heard Parvati.
Didn't
like,
she throw out her name? She did after the round table. She was pissed off and goes, Parvati's like, can't believe she said that. Like she started to say things after the round table.
And I agree. And it's like, there's a fine line of what you can say. Cause in the beginning, when the traders take their like oath, you have to promise you're not going to tell anyone you're a trader, et cetera. So there are a few rules.
Yeah. You can't be I just have a feeling Parvati's a trip, but you can be like, that was sus. Like she's sus.
Like Ceree with Cody and Christian, like she ended up getting both of those people out. So yeah, I mean, I'm scared for Parvati, but I also trust Parvati because I think she could get out of it. I think that like
she has to turn the charm up and the social game on because so far she's used it in different ways, right? Get the cup and stuff. But I just feel like this edit isn't showing the charming Parvati that like I think could go far.
I agree. And I think that's her strongest game is her social game. And they're giving us a lot of Parvati reaction shots, but they're not giving and confessionals, but they're not giving us any personality within the game. You're right. She's not giving any like Ceree like reactions and talking. And like, there's like a million things of Ceree talking with Faithfuls, really strategizing with Faithfuls. And Parvati is just not. Parvati sits and listens. Who knows if it's the edit? Who's to say? But what we're given, Parvati, girl, come on. We want you to win the season. Yeah. So
Ceree had gotten like the character or like position she got herself in was kind of like mama bear. Like she was like really making like familial bonds with the people who
she ruined
she
Andy's
on
life
at the end. Andy's in therapy to this day.
They really are.
rumor has it they hung up a picture of Ceree in their baby's nursery and said that is Satan.
Yeah, it's a dartboard. Face exactly. Of Ceree.
But you know what I mean? Like, I think Ceree found her like social avenue and milked it. I don't think Parvati's found it here. I also think that's fair because classically her social game isn't strongest with women, especially women who fucking just play mind games all day for a living. So I think it's a real test for her, but the charm probably wouldn't go as far with them because they're all stone cold bitches.
Parvati's strategy in games are interesting because I would actually say her allyships are with women. Her, at least Micronesia not heroes, villains, I guess. It's interesting because she is
Always women involved. She's not not a girl's. That's not what I mean.
I'm not saying that.
Blasting the charm. It just wouldn't work on this crowd as well. So I
totally agree.
But she needs to dial it up, as we said. Some social aspect. Yeah.
She should be able to charm the girlies. What the hell?
Yeah, that's her forte these days.
Queer angel. Okay. So, I mean, what a fucking episode. I thought it was amazing. I am just yearning for more episodes. The second it's done, I'm like dying for another. Thanks for coming on. What do you got? What are your final thoughts?
The last thing I have was that I hate women pitted against each other, especially when a mediocre man gets a stronger foothold. So that's how I felt about the drama in the turret. It's like, those two are at each other, and now Dan is that much safer and like in a better place. And that makes me sick. Me fucking sick.
Yeah. Because
these are two strong women who give good TV, and he's a goddamn wall drying with paint on it.
He is. I agree. I'm not the biggest Dan fan, but he's just somewhere in the middle for me. Like, it's fine. As long as he doesn't fuck up Parvati's game, I'm fine.
I mean, he seems to be more loyal to her.
Is exactly why we need Kevin on the pod to be a housewife stan, because I've said Parvati's name 40,000 times this episode. All right. So that's the episode. Thanks for listening. Again, if you're new here, go follow Binchdown TV. That's where all of our stuff drops. You can find our Survivor 45 coverage there if you're a reality TV person or if you want to do any scripted stuff. So, Al, thanks for joining. Mm-hmm. I love you. Let's maybe watch an episode of Survivor after this.
Sure.
We started Panama season 12 last night. We watched two episodes. That's Cerie's first season. So anyway, thanks for listening. Also, there's a Discord link. Come join our Discord and then we can talk about the traitors live and all week to fill the gaping hole of not having another episode to watch. So love you. We are Binge on TV. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.